Joining us on the line now, as he does every Monday, happy to have him on the program, Kevin Bieksa on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you doing?
We're good, thanks. I had a question that I actually asked just aloud before break. I'm like, oh, I should ask this of Kevin Bieksa. He'd be a good guy to answer it. How would you feel if you were playing meaningless regular season games while there were other teams playing playoff games at the exact same time?
I'd feel absolutely terrible. And I'm lucky through my career. I think there's only one time that I can remember, and it was with the season with Tortorella, where we were eliminated with maybe 3 weeks, I think, left in the season.
Right.
Mathematically. And up until that point, we were kind of still in the fight, and we had a little bit of a slump that took us out of it. But I remember those last 3 weeks weren't particularly easy, just getting up for the games and being motivated. But for the rest of my career, I never really had that issue. The one time we were battling, it was, I think, the other year that I missed the playoffs, and we ended up being eliminated. We had to beat Edmonton. It was back when Edmonton was terrible. And we had to beat Edmonton second last game of the season, and then we had to beat Calgary the last game of the season to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up losing to Edmonton at home. And then the next night we had to play Calgary. And if we had won, it would have been a really meaningful game, everything on the line, win and go on. And we ended up playing Calgary the next night. And that was Trevor Linden's retirement night.
Right.
If you remember him skating around after, and again, the whole team staying on his shake hand. But I just remember that game being the most difficult. Everyone's a professional, and you know, we had a job to do. Well, no, like doing my warm up for that game was, you just kept questioning in your head, like, what's the point, you know? So kind of cut the warm up short, probably just played soccer the whole time, and you just, I don't know, as a human being, you just want challenges, and you want obstacles, and you want things to try to overcome. And when you're playing a game for no reason, it's hard mentally to totally give it your 100% focus.
So with that being said, what did you think when you heard the news of how the Canucks are going to finish out their regular season?
Well, it's just such a tough situation because it's unprecedented. We don't know, you know, how bad some of these players are feeling and if they're going to be able to return. And I mean, they're trying to make the best of it, but it's a difficult situation for the players too, for being off so long and then coming back and trying to condense the schedule, and everyone else is affected, and they're trying to be professionals, and they're going to be tested. And you know, at the end of the day, they're going to be tested on whether or not they came and they competed and they played hard. And you know, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they still have to go on and put on a show. And some of them are still playing for contracts and for money and opportunity. So that's kind of what you have to tell yourself.
We're speaking to Kevin Bieksa here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What about when you thought of the decision, not necessarily from what it's going to mean about the players, but the league putting them in this spot? Like, I know you're not in the room, and I know you only maybe have spoken to one or two guys on the team, but there's two parts of this, right? There's the one is that you have to get yourself physically fit after being off for a long period of time. But you're not just doing that to get ready for a regular style campaign. Like, the numbers on this thing, Kevin, are wild. There's six back-to-backs in the 31 days. They don't have more than one day off in between games. All the back-to-back scenarios are where you end up playing three games in four nights. Like, it is a huge grind. And you've also got that sort of looming specter over it that it might not mean anything. In fact, it probably doesn't mean
anything.
As
one texter put it, Kevin, if you're looking to sign a PTO, the Canucks might need you down the stretch.
Yeah, it's not ideal. And I guess if you look at it that way, it's pretty daunting. And I sure hope the players don't look at it the same way you guys just critique that thing. Like, well, six back to back. It's one game at a time, and I think most of the guys, they've been off for a while, and they're probably not a good chance of making the playoffs, or there isn't. You know, they're probably chomping at the bit a little bit to get back on the ice and play the game they love. And I don't know, what's worse? You guys tell me, what do you think is worse? Last season when they decided to have the bubble playoffs, and those seven teams like Anaheim and LA weren't even invited to play, and those guys had to sit around for 8 months and just watch hockey and not be able to participate. Or you're in this situation with the Canucks where you're not going to make the playoffs, but at least you get to go out there and throw a lump on a lick on a guy, or you know, score a big goal or get into a fight, at least you get to contribute.
Yep.
Right? At least you get to participate. Yep. So I think this is better than that situation, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, I still play beer league hockey, and we pay to play hockey.
Yeah,
so,
everyone gets some exercise.
You get some exercise out there. It's a little bit different, I think.
Make some friends along the way.
Yeah,
it's not bad.
I mean, from my perspective, I'm looking forward to some of the kids that we might see in the Canucks lineup, whether it's Jack Rathbone, young defenseman, or Cole Lind, at least see something different, experiment a little bit, and I think they're going to need a lot of bodies, so you might as well play some of these young guys.
Yeah, it's audition time for sure, and it's actually a really great opportunity for management and coaches to, like you said, to see what they have, and some of these young guys that you're a little bit hesitant to throw in the lineup because, you know, the games are so important and you don't want to put too much on these guys' plates and too much on them. Well, now all of a sudden you can kind of start taking these guys and plucking them in and out of the lineup, and you know, you can tell them, listen, like, this is the plan. Like, in on this certain day, you're going to play your first game, and then, you know, 3 games later, you're going to play your second. And then, you know, there's a little bit of a strategy and there's a little bit of a plan in place for these guys. So, you know, as much as I want to critique sometimes the way Shea Theodore was treated in Anaheim, there was a bit of a plan for him. He was playing in San Diego, and they had a plan where, because it was only a 2-hour drive, they would call him up for a week of practice with us, and then they'd send him back down. He'd play games. So he started out by just coming up for, you know, 3-4 days at a time with the big club, just practicing, and then being sent down again. And he did that a few times to get comfortable, to get up to the pace of play. And then after that, they started calling him up sparingly for games. And now I'm sure he didn't love it, but turn into a pretty good friggin' player now, don't you think?
Yeah.
So you can do something similar with these young Canuck players. You just have to have a plan in place.
It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We're talking with Kevin Bieksa. Let's move on to some of the trades that have already been made. What do you think Foligno will bring to the Leafs? Was that a good trade for Toronto?
I like Foligno. I've always liked him. I like character and I like integrity, and I think his family brings that, and him in particular. I've got a good story about him. It's a little bit long-winded, but it just shows, like, this guy's a high-character guy. And I think, yeah, like, regular season, I don't know how much he would really, you know, help out a first-place Maple Leaf team in the regular season because, you know, they're a pretty good team and they're pretty deep and they get a lot of scoring. But the way the playoffs are played and the way Columbus shut them down last year, like, they're tight-checking games. They're physical. There's maybe not as much as the Maple Leafs, like, that possession style where they bring a lot of pucks back, their wingers. They skate away from the defense when they bring it back in their zone. They try to wind it up. That game doesn't really translate as well, I think, in the playoffs. It's more stop and start. It's more chipping. It's more pucks in deep, like Anthony Stewart likes to say. And that style of play is what Foligno does. He's a heavy body. He's not very big, but he plays really big. He's really good around the net. He's got good hands and tight, good shot. He'll score you a lot of those dirty goals in front. And honestly, like, he's probably going to be their toughest guy. No disrespect to Bogosian and to Simmons, but he's a tough, tough, underrated fighter. Mm-hmm. So if he ever had to fight to, you know, protect a Matthews or a Marner, he could definitely do that. Like, he's not going to allow them to get bullied. So I really like it. I think a lot of people just look on the surface at numbers and you know, declining numbers and things like that. But I think for what they picked him up for, he's going to be perfect.
I'm very curious to watch the Leafs in the playoffs this year. I think one of the things that gets misremembered or not given enough respect about the Canucks, the good Canucks teams that you played for, was how good defensively you guys were and how well you checked. You're a great penalty-killing team. Your goals against was one of the lowest in the league. And the game does change in the playoffs, does it not?
It does a ton. It's not going to be as, there's not going to be as many chances for. So if you're generating 15 chances for a game, that usually gets dropped or closer to 10 or just under 10 in the playoffs. So you're not getting as many opportunities to score. And sometimes, like, you could still capitalize on them. But with that team that we had, we prided ourselves on being a very good defensive. You look at, you know, Kessler and Malhotra and even Henrik Sedin, those three centermen, they were just as competitive in our end as they were in the other end, and arguably more competitive in our end. So, you know, a lot of those games, I tell people, the year that we went to the Cup Final, if you look at the regular season, we had a lot of scores that were 4-1, 5-2. We had a lot of those games, but honestly, they were all one-goal games going into the third period, we would get a power play at some point of the third period, and we would stick the needle in the dagger, or the dagger in the heart, and we would score on the power play, and now we're up two goals, and then the other team would pull the goal at the end of the game, and we'd get an empty netter, and we win by three goals. That's the way it usually went for us. But it was always a one-goal game until a late big power play goal. That's kind of how that season went. So always prided ourselves on being able to win those close games and being able to keep the other team, you know, the under two goals or under.
Kevin, what did you think of Taylor Hall going to Boston?
It's just interesting with him and Seguin, right? Like, just going back to, to Boston. Like, I heard him talking about, I remember visiting the city of Boston with Seguin at the draft, and I really liked it. Well, yeah, of course. Like, it's a great city. Of course you liked it. But just a guy, you know, he's been on a lot of teams. He's been on five teams in 6 years. And, I looked at his numbers. At first, I thought it was for a first-rounder. I thought he got traded for a first-rounder. I'm like, wow, like what a steal for Buffalo if they got rid of him for a first-rounder. But it's actually a second-rounder. But he scored one goal. He scored one goal since January 14th. That's it, right? And he hasn't scored a goal in over a month, almost a month and a half. He's a guy who just is, I don't know, his production is declining. And if you look at it, he came out of the gates with Buffalo pretty decent. He had 9 points in nine games. He had 1-1 his first game. Then he went the next game with nothing. Then he had three assists. I just wonder, just knowing a little bit about him, like, is playing on a bad losing team in Buffalo with zero people in the stands, did he just lose all motivation and just not care and just write the season off? And is he going to be like one of those guys who comes out of the gates with Boston and just is a pleasant surprise? I'm sure that's what they're hoping in Boston, right? They're hoping that, you know, this season he just kind of gave up on. It was a bad team, playing terrible, no excitement in the crowd, and he's going to come into a really good team and, you know, where he's going to slot in that lineup. But he'll be playing with good players, and maybe he'll come out of the gates and start producing again.
You know, escaping Buffalo has been a theme this trade deadline. Eric Staal got brand new life in Montreal. A guy that this trade didn't get a lot of attention, but I wanted to ask you about this specifically, is Brandon Montour went from Buffalo to Florida, where he'll get a chance to go to the playoffs after playing for the worst team in the NHL. I want to ask you, because you played with him in Anaheim, and I remember when he first jumped onto the scene in Anaheim and thinking, like, they've got a guy here who's young, who looks really talented. Like, this is a guy that's going to be a franchise-type defenseman for the Ducks. You remember that playoff run when you guys lost to Nashville in the conference final? I mean, Montour was, like, one of the stories. And then a few years later, you see he's toiling away in Buffalo and gets had for a third-round pick. What all happened here?
Oh, the Anaheim curse, right? Think about that team, like, going back to the, you know, the conference finals. We had seven really good defensemen. And then you fast forward a few years later and you're like, what happened? So going to Montour and actually bringing back in the Shea Theodore reference I had earlier, the funny thing is, as good as Montour played in that playoff run, that actually made Shea Theodore expendable at the expansion draft.
Right.
So everyone seems to think the expansion draft had something to do with me and my no-move clause. It had absolutely nothing to do with my no-move clause, because at the end of the day, whether or not I lifted it or not, and I told them I was willing to lift it. And then, you know, before I had to make a decision, they had a deal to move Shea to Vegas and take off Clayton Stoner's contract off the books, because most likely he wasn't going to play anymore because he was injured. But Montour played so good that the choice was between Theodore and Sammy Vatanen. And the team decided to stick with Sammy Vatanen.
Yeah.
And because they knew they had Montour in the pipeline. And that's why Shea Theodore was let go to Vegas. And that obviously has proved to be a terrible decision, because, you know, look at what he's turned into. But Montour, you know, he's a good player, but he's a gunslinger. And I like Monty. He's a friend of mine. He's a gunslinger. He likes to just – you have to let him be creative. You have to let him roam around the ice. You have to let him just be – and when you're a young guy and you're a young offensive guy, teams are willing to allow you to do that. They're like, you know, he's a young guy. He's just trying to find his game and create offense. And as he's gotten, you know, later into his career, and teams, I think, are probably expecting him to play a more 200-foot style game. Well, I don't know if that's his style of game. If you're going to try to get the most out of Brandon Montour, you got to let him go. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in Florida, if they just take the reins off and let him go and let him do his thing and roam around and put him with a pretty responsible pairing. And that's when he plays his best.
Ryan Getzlaff, his name is out there in rumors right now. Could he still help a playoff team?
Oh, absolutely. I just don't know if Getzy wants to go anywhere. That's the thing. And we've heard the rumors about Montreal, and There's a couple other teams in there as well.
The Vegas one, I keep. It makes so much sense. It makes so much sense. It does.
Yeah, but you guys gotta have to understand, Ryan Getzlaf here is like Trevor Linden is in Vancouver. So Ryan Getzlaf is put this, you know, this franchise on. He's got an unbelievable relationship with ownership. Ownership absolutely loves the guy, as they should. Management loves the guy. The coaches love and respect the guy. He has the final say. This isn't one of those things where they're like trying to convince Getzy to go somewhere. It's like, what do you think about this? If you don't like it, then we're not going to bug you again. So he has the call here. He'll get to decide what he wants to do. If he wants to move away, he's got four kids though. Don't forget, guys, he's got four young kids. If he wants to move away and go live in a hotel somewhere and try to win a cup, and it's hard to pick who, you know, there's so much parity in the league. It's hard to pick which team is going to win the cup. So who do you go to? Yeah, you got a great job, great chance in Vegas. You're close enough that your family can come visit you. So maybe that's a fit, but it doesn't look like the Montreal thing with going over the border, that's going to work. But ultimately, Getzy's going to have the final call there.
Kevin, can you take us through the whole process of the expansion draft as it relates to Shea Theodore in Anaheim and being asked, did management come to you and said, are you willing to waive your no-move clause? How did that all work out? Because I think this might be the first time that I've heard this. Maybe I just haven't been paying attention, but I mean, I guess you do get, if the word is blamed, quite often for the Ducks losing Theodore. Does that bother you? And how did it all play out?
Well, I actually told a story on the Kess and Juice podcast one time. I can't remember what episode it was, but Kess and I talked about it. And I told the full story. It's a little bit longer story, but the bottom line is, like I just said, management came to me, and there's a longer story to this, but they came to me and they said, would you be willing to move your no move clause? And I said, well, yeah, but let's talk closer too. So then closer to, we got to it, and they said, will you move your no move clause? And I said, okay, well, they're like, we just want to preserve this young group of defensemen. We got a good team. And I said, oh, okay. And I have one year left on my deal after that year. And I said, okay, well, if I'm going to help preserve this group, then give me a 1 year extension. So I get at least get to be a part of this group that I'm helping to preserve. And he's like, oh, okay, that sounds, I never thought about that. So by the time he got back to me, he said, don't worry about it, I've already figured something else out. So, and that was the Stoner thing. So they, you know, obviously ownership probably didn't want Stoner's contract on the books for, I think it was 3.5, because Stoner was injured and most likely wasn't going to come back. So it was a bit of a contract shed to Vegas, and then they took Theodore in the process. Because like I said, the decision had to still be made. Even if I lifted my no-move clause, they would have protected Sammy Vatanen, and then Shea Theodore would have still been exposed. So the decision to make was between, because they kept Fowler, Lindholm, and Manson, for sure. Those were the top three.
Yep.
They had to keep me, but if I lift my no-move clause, they still have to make a decision between Sammy Vatanen and Shea Theodore, keeping in mind they have Brandon Montour in the pipeline.
Yeah.
Well, they decided to go with Brandon Montour and Sammy Vatanen, and they exposed Shea Theodore. So that's kind of the way it unfolds. So all the people out there that like to blame my no-move clause, it actually has nothing to do with it. So they should probably give their head a little shake. But at the end of the day, I could care less, because it has nothing to do with me.
The record has been set straight. Kev, thanks for doing this today, man. We really appreciate it. Enjoy Trade Deadline Monday. We'll talk again in 7 days' time.
Oh, it's going to be a blast, guys. I can't wait.
Thanks, Kevin. You can sense the excitement in his voice. Thanks, Kevin. Take it easy, man. That's Kevin Bieksa here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. So by the reason I wanted to bring that up.
You know, we got some guys down this year that, you know, I think will be challenging for jobs next year on our team. Young players, we got the Colson coming in. You know, Triamkin, we'd like to try to get him signed. So we got some, you know, good young players that we're going to add into our group here moving forward that, you know, we think are going to only make us better. And with the maturity of the young players we have.
8:31 on a Monday, Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Canucks GM Jim Benning there. I assume that there will be some sort of post-deadline media availability today. There usually is, even if nothing goes on.
Just nothing happened. All right. See
right.
You later,
but with the Canucks, there would also be some sort of announcement that the facility is back open today after yesterday's opening was delayed by a day because Jay Beagle was put on COVID-19 protocols, in case you missed that. Now, Beagle has been away from the team because he's injured. But having another player added to the, 24 that were already on the list, it's a lot.
Could be the Vancouver media just treading water. So, I don't know, tell us more about Trampkin, I guess.
Sure. Or why didn't you make a move today? Or all were right. there any nibbles? Now, we don't know that there aren't going to be any moves yet. By the way, Sportsnet's broadcast television coverage is currently underway. Go to Sportsnet on your local cable provider. It's Jeff Merrick, it's Chris Johnson, it's Elliot Friedman, a three-man panel leading you through to noon Pacific, which is when the NHL trade deadline is. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650 throughout the day. Scotty and Karen will have you for the next 4 hours once we're done. The People's Show will have you in the PM drive. And, of course, Bick and the Boss will have you right at the key time, really, because that'll be when the deadline is over, but there's usually that 45-minute window in there after the 12 Pacific deadline where a lot of the deals kind of get announced, right?
Can I stop you?
What?
First of all, what happened to the nicknames? You completely abandoned both of them.
Sir Tool instead of Scotty and Karen.
Yeah, and then the Peep Show.
A.K.A. We Are Family.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, Scotty and Sermon are on till 1.
Uh-huh.
So they would be the ones that have the prime access between noon and 1 o'clock.
This is why the humanoids always get ignored during what we learned when we should be reading their texts in the Dunbar Lumber text line, because you guys are yammering on about the Sir Tool show.
To be fair, I remember the latest
you
ever.
Keep talking?
The latest the trade ever came in was 1:15. I remember that. They were still breaking trades then. Okay.
We're going to need a few things for this class.
Boring.
An eagerness to learn. A thirst for knowledge.
So, what did we learn in the last 24 hours?
When life gives you lemons, just say f*** the lemons and bail.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
Know what we learned from Bruff and I today, or Dom for that matter. We're just going to jump straight to the humanoids. A reminder to text yours in. What did you learn? Good, good, very good. What did you learn over the last 72 hours in sports? Let us know. We print them out. Dom just did on the old dot matrix. Do you have one ready or do you want me to start?
What we learned, I learned, this is unsigned, so it must be from Gary. People sign your texts. I learned that Happy Gilmore's caddy from the Waterbridge Open finished second at the Masters, hashtag Zalatoris. Everyone had a take on what Zalatoris looked like.
Or who.
Who, yeah. I was kind of like, I'm seeing Paris Hilton.
Yep.
And this again? We did 10 minutes on this to start the show.
I know, people might have missed
it. Them in.
Will Zalatoris get, yeah, so.
Owen Wilson, a lot.
Yeah, I said I got shades of Bernhard Langer, but I think that's more about the hair than anything else. Although Bernhard Langer is also very thin and fit.
And Zalatoris might look like $1 million when he's 63, like Langer continues to look.
By the way,
did he make the cut? I think he made the cut.
Oh,
63
really?
Years old, Bernhard Langer is my sports hero.
Didn't we do a bit on him at 1040 before he got unceremoniously dumped?
What? Oh, we did.
Yeah.
I thought you meant him.
No.
He's had a very interesting life, Bernhard Langer.
Maybe we can get him on the show one time. Dom, chase Bernhard Langer.
Yeah.
On it.
I'm not even joking.
No, get sure, him. I will, yeah.
I think he would be a fascinating interview. Mm-hmm. He's still a really good athlete at making cuts.
Langer didn't make the cut.
He didn't make the cut? Did you just miss, though?
I don't know.
Okay. Safety Shane, what we learned. The biggest winner in the Canucks' new schedule is Braden Holtby after the Canucks had already played most of their back-to-backs. Yeah, Braden Holtby's going to get some playing time. I wonder if DiPietro might too.
Yeah.
Imagine if DiPietro's like 60 pounds overweight. He's like, I haven't done anything athletic.
Are you guys ever going to throw me in a good spot here?
Yeah.
Every time I play games, it's a nightmare. I'll throw this out there as something to look for. The Canucks, it's unfortunate that their AHL affiliate isn't in Canada. It really is. Because they could have given minutes to guys, and you would have got the, at the very least, the energy and the piss and vinegar of guys that know that this might be their only shot, right? And you know, you sometimes can squeeze something out of a guy that maybe he doesn't even know that he has. But they're limited by what they can do here. I think the taxi squad guys are all going to be rotated in pretty heavily. A couple people have pointed out in the Dunbar Lumber text best basket that this could be the time where Braden Holtby gets more games than he would have imagined, especially the way things were going prior to COVID hitting the team. So there's those things to look for. I just look at, and Drance brought this up on Twitter yesterday, and it was a fairly astute observation. The reason that Montreal hasn't really widened that gap on the Canucks lately and has really hit the skids is because Montreal's at the end of playing like 7-12.
Mm-hmm.
They're tired from playing so many games in a condensed schedule. That's going to happen to the Canucks. Like, the Canucks could very well come out of this, and in the first few games, they might end up surprising you and like get some results and win 3 or 4 or 4 or 5 because maybe they do have an untapped reserve of energy that wasn't sapped from them, or maybe they've got decent, like, who knows, right? Mm-hmm. The point is that this catches up with everyone. We've seen it throughout the NHL. The condensed schedule just catches up with you after a while, and you're tired.
Well, and when you take away the motivation, too, which is why I think they should be playing all sorts of kids, because the kids will be individually motivated. Mm-hmm. Cole Lynn, you put him in the lineup, do you think he's going to care that the Canucks are out of a playoff spot? No, he's like, I'm in the NHL now, and I'm trying to make an impression. Yeah. So play those guys a lot. Mark, give Alex Edler the odd day off.
Yeah. Here's a good time.
He doesn't need to play every game. He just doesn't.
Here's a good time to play Ole Ullevi. A lot of minutes.
A lot, too. And play him in tough matchups.
All kinds of situations, right?
Right? You don't have to shelter him like crazy.
There's Connor McDavid. Go defend him.
Because Edler can't.
Right. Well, not
nobody can. Yeah. God, he's
just
so good.
Just try it.
What we learned from Ed the Knucklehead. Can't believe I'm going to say this, but it's good to hear Halford's voice again.
Oh.
I can't believe you said that either. So we agree on that.
Thank you.
Ed the Knucklehead.
Thank you, Ed.
Dustin from Abbey, what we learned. John Rahm pulled off the never contended for a second top five finish at the Masters this weekend, yeah. AKA the Rory special. Rory was totally lost to the Masters. I know he's going through some swing changes, but he hit some just awful shots. Rahm was 6 under, I think, in his final round. So he might have had the round of the day on Sunday, but yeah, he never scared the leader.
I know, it was great. That's like, you know, those Olympic races where there's a neck and neck race for first and second, and then there's like a minute long gap, and then the bronze medal winner runs across.
Yeah,
that was John Rahm. He's like, I got a medal. I got a medal out of this. This is amazing.
You haven't read one yet.
I know, so I left my What We Learned page. Just hold on.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. This is the one I was talking about. Safety Shane, hashtag WWL, What We Learned. The biggest winner in the Canucks
news. I read that one.
The Holtby one?
Yep.
Sorry.
You're off a little bit today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He wasn't even listening to me.
Welcome back.
Yeah. I've done that before, though.
Yep,
but honestly, while you panic search for another What We Learned, I wanted to say something more about Braden Holtby because I kind of got diverted on the Mike DiPietro track.
Okay.
With Braden Holtby, the Canucks do need to play him into form because I don't think they're going to be able to trade him this summer.
No, and you don't think
12 hours to go.
What was that?
Oh, everyone's screwing up right now, are they? Except me.
I got a feeling Seattle might not take him either.
Why would Seattle take him?
No, I know. Well, I guess we'd have to wait and see what the other goalies available are.
I think there's going to be a ton of better goalies available.
Probably.
Why would Seattle take
them? A ton of less expensive goalies.
Unless the Canucks gave them something.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Canucks ever going to do that? Have they ever shed a big salary by throwing something in? Am I missing an obvious one here that they did? That they needed to shed salary and they traded something away?
I don't know.
It doesn't feel like they've done it.
You know what? Dom wants us to break early here, so we'll do that. We'll answer that question on the other side. I do have some What We Learns flagged here that I haven't read, or
do you
Jason
really?
Has read already.
Do yeah, you really? Is I that do. A promise?
Yes, it is an absolute promise.
Okay.
I promise you, no repetitive What We Learns. That's coming up next. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet, 650.
Bow, wow, wow.
.8:45 on a Monday, Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. After I was yelled at for not flagging enough What We Learns and then reading one that had already been read. My bad.
Yeah.
My bad. Hand up. And take ownership.
You're a little rusty. You missed Thursday and Friday. That's okay.
I made one mistake, and I'm a little rusty.
Can I do what we learned?
Yes.
What we learned, Jason can host a show on his own.
Yeah, I know. That was good.
How did Poorly. I got through it.
I didn't say how. I just said you could.
Friday was easier because I was actually able to prep for the show. So and knowing that I'd be by myself, Halford called me Thursday morning at like 4 in the morning. He's like, I'm really sick. I'm not coming in today.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Jason just responded. He's like, all right. And then I was like, there's a chance he's going to go back to bed and be like, that was just a dream. And there's also a chance that he's going to get up and be very panicked about this. But you did a good job. Very well done. I left you in very tough circumstances there. So kudos to you, my friend. What we learned from Juan in Comox, Jarmo Kekalainen is starting to become my favorite general manager. He's guaranteed to do something on trade deadline day from going all in a couple of years ago to trading away players for first rounders. How I wish the Canucks had a GM like him. Columbus. I feel like Columbus is always this
active,
like, tempest in a teapot kind of team where they're always, something's always bubbling. Like they're either always going to make a big move because they feel they're ready to go for it, or they have to go for it because all their good players are going to leave. And now it's like, we got to trade guys.
Do you know Seth Jones only has 1 year left on his deal before he's UFA?
I know.
Are they going to be able to sign him to an extension? Mm-hmm. Are they going to sign Laine? I know Laine's an RFA, but he forced his way out of Winnipeg. Are they going to bring back Torts? And if they do bring back Torts, is Laine going to want to continue on playing for Torts? It's too bad in a way that Columbus is such a small market team because a lot of interesting stuff happens there.
They're all it feels like they're constantly in a state of flux.
They are.
Like it's never
That's
settled.
Because
like remember when
they went wasn't Foligno their captain?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's gone now.
I know. There's a lot of talk that he's going to go back and resign. He'll do the old, we trade you and then we get you back. I mean, I think that one would make more sense because he's got a lot of, he's got a young family and he's got a lot of kids and they're all in Columbus. So his stuff's there. Guys,
he goes
just
to Toronto for one playoff round. He's like, oh, enough of that pressure cooker.
Yeah, I'm back to Columbus I go. So there's that. But they are an interesting team. It is a shame that it's like Columbus because at the end of the day, not a lot of people.
Do you think Torts will be back?
No. I think that they're going to need some sort of organizational or identity overhaul there to a certain degree. I think what Torts brought in was the no one respects you guys and no one wants to play here and it's us against the world and we're the forgotten ugly sister of the NHL and it's Columbus and nobody likes it, no one respects it. And I think he did a good job of using that to fuel some of those guys. But at this stage of the game, what's Columbus best known for right now? If you ask me, what's the number one thing about a Columbus? I'm like, everyone.
Ohio State.
No, I'm like, everyone wants to leave. Their best players leave. Yeah. That's what happened. Their best players want out. Bobrovsky wanted out. Panarin wanted out. Dubois wanted out. Ryan Johansson wanted out. What's going to happen with Seth Jones? What's going to happen with Zach Werenski? Who's going to sign on long-term here? So I think they need to do something differently.
Neil is fired up in the Dunbar Lumber text line.
Okay.
Over a Braden Holtby take.
Okay.
I love this. Neil texts in, you guys are brutal. How can you state that Seattle won't take Holtby when you admit you don't even know what other goalies will be available? Number one, a lot of goalies will be available.
There will be 31 of them.
Yes. There are a lot of goalies will be available and a lot are pending free agents too if they want to just sign one. Why do you assume they wouldn't want his contract when it is for 1 year and they have to get to the cap floor? Do you think, Neil, and I know this is just my quote-unquote uneducated opinion, why is Seattle going to be desperate to get to the cap floor? Do you know how cap-strapped a lot of teams are around the league? There are going to be some very good players available for Seattle to acquire. Would they maybe be interested in taking on Braden Holtby if something comes along with that deal? Sure. Maybe. And I suppose there's a chance that they would take Holtby from Vancouver because there would be nothing else worth taking. Like, maybe. But Neil, calm down, man.
He also said...
You finished this off by saying, Stop making statements that are just your uneducated opinions and have no facts behind them. Then in all caps, brutal, obviously you guys won't read this on the air. So you're wrong about one thing, Neil, for sure, because we did read it on the air. And Neil, calm down, man. It's hockey.
I thought we weren't going to do this.
I'm not Mount Bruffing, though. I'm just telling Neil.
A little
bruffing. It's like 8:51 on a Monday, Neil. You got a long week ahead of you, but the weather's going to be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So go outside. All right.
By the way, two goalies off the top of my head that I've seen either mock drafted or suggested, Chris Driedger and Anton Hudobin for the Seattle Kraken.
Right.
If you want other options that are out there, just to show that we did a little bit of education. We re-educated.
No, Neil will not accept that, though. I'm curious. I will say, I'm curious to see what the Canucks try and do with Holtby. Mm-hmm. Do they bring him back, or do they try and upgrade in the backup position? Can they play him into better form down the stretch? Like, that might be something worth watching, mm-hmm. right? Down the stretch. Can Holtby find his game again and
sure.
maybe make him more marketable if the Canucks do want to move him, or maybe make him more attractive to the Vancouver Canucks to bring him back next season and be the backup?
One final check-in now before we go away. It's Adam Forsyth on the breaking news desk. I don't know if we have any actual breaking news, but he's recapping everything from NHL trade deadline day. Adam, take it away.
Congrats, gentlemen. You made it through your entire show without a single deal on trade deadline. There were 16 deals since Friday night, none this morning. Hopefully it picks up a little bit later. The one notable trade from yesterday, of course, Taylor Hall to the Bruins. He chatted with the media today, said he actually had several options on teams he wanted to go to, and he chose Boston. He is making the drive to Boston so he can avoid quarantine, and he's expected to be in the lineup when he faces his former team, Buffalo, tomorrow. That's all I got for you.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it. A reminder that all NHL trade deadline coverage here on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your local family and employee-owned wholesale distributor. With locations across Western Canada, you can purchase heating, plumbing, and irrigation supplies, or you can do it online at Sherritt.com. We are coming to the end of the trade deadline special show of Halford and Brough on Sportsnet 650. Thank you all for listening today. Keep it right here. Sir Tool is next, Bick and the Boss after that, and The Family Show followed by that. We are family. Randeep and Riccio and me. We got to get out of here. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He has been Jason Brough. This has been Halford and Brough on Sportsnet 650.